This podcast was originally live streamed on the Non Sequitur Show on YouTube. New episodes air weekdays, Monday through Friday, at 8 p.m. Eastern at youtube.com/nonsequiturshow. Make sure you never miss a live stream by visiting www.nonsecshow.com/schedule. For the latest news, polls and updates throughout the day, follow us on Twitter, at nonsecshow or facebook.com/nonsecshow. That's NONSEQ show. If you'd like to get exclusive content, bi-weekly private hangouts with Kyle and Steve, backstage access to chat with guests after shows hosted on your channel and much more, become a Patreon saint of Non Sequitur. It ensures we continue to improve our show and brings you into the process at the same time. Visit patreon.com/nonsequitur today while the limited spots are still available.
The following podcast is intended for those who believe bold ideas are righteous, unique perspectives are gospel, and strong opinions are sacred. This is Non Sequitur. Never follow. And now, here are your hosts, Kyle Curtis and Steve McRae.
Well, if you are coming here tonight to talk about climate change, we have a little issue. I completely misunderstood what our guest who will be coming to talk about climate change next Monday at this time was saying when he reached out the first time, and it was supposed to be just a meeting between he, Steve, and I to talk about how the show would go. And actually, did we lose Steve?
No, I'm here. I did it.
Okay.
You sent it for a sec.
My mistake, and he'll be back here next week. It was kind of funny, actually, because when I came into the call, I said, how did I bring it up, Steve? I can't remember now. I said something like, when we go live.
And he's like, wait, live?
He got that deer in the headlights looked. It was just so priceless.
Yeah.
Like, wait, we're going on the air? What?
I said, oh, shit. Okay. All right. Ben will be with us next Monday at the same time, and we'll do climate change then. Tomorrow, we're going to have an abortion roundtable. It'll be Casey, Shannon, and then two other people who are anti-abortion. We're going to be talking about the different laws that have been going on here recently about abortion. Is it under attack? Is it threatened? That sort of thing. Wednesday, we've got Dr. Alex Malpass and Jay Dyer. That's going to be at 4 p.m. Eastern, not our usual 9, because Dr. Malpass is in across the pond. And Thursday, what is Thursday? Oh, Thursday is me and Shannon. And then Friday, Adam Kokish. Oh, Adam's coming back. Aren't you excited about that, Steve?
Oh, Adam. My boy, Adam.
Yeah.
That should be
so much fun.
Adam. I just think he has idealistic tendencies.
He's got a lot of energy, that's for sure. He asked, he said, who's going to be the guest? And I said, I learned the last time you came on with a guest that's not never going to happen again.
No, wait a minute. Didn't he have a discussion with Sargon?
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Like, yeah. if you have him with somebody else, you'll never get a word in, ever.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That was the quietest Sargon has ever been in his entire life.
Well, he couldn't get a word in wedgewise. That's why.
It was. Lucy, I'll be able to keep up with your super chats as we go along tonight, since it's going to be just a laid-back taking your calls and then well, first thing he's going to read a letter, but this one says, I love you, Kyle. I am the one on Twitter who said Jimmy had better hair, but your hair is better than Cinnamon Toast Crunch. I'm just Jimmy's friend and love him madly, but I love you too. Well, I can forgive you for saying that Jimmy's hair is better than mine, but I cannot forgive you for saying that anything is better than Cinnamon Toast Crunch. That's just going way too far.
Try that stuff.
You have never tried it?
If I have, I certainly don't remember. Stop it. I get the almond stuff, like the nut and honey, that kind of stuff. That's what I use for cereal.
Isn't that what a Southern Belle says to their husband when they ask what's wrong?
Nothing, honey.
After all the cereals that I have tried, Kyle, I have to say Cinnamon Toast Crunch is my favorite.
You like it too?
I do. I do.
When I go shopping tomorrow, I'll pick some up. I'll try it. How bad could it be?
It's like Golden Grahams, but better.
Says for reparations of disappointment, the audience demands shirtless show from Kyle, preferably with an 80s mullet. Well, that's a maybe, but you will be getting a shirtless show from Steve on the 18th of July. Because you can thank Josephus for that. So
yeah, I was rooting for Tacitus, but that didn't come to fruition.
Half people don't understand that joke. I know. If you have a disagreement with Steve or I, or you have something that you would like to us to explain, clarify, that sort of thing, those are the calls we're going to take first. We do appreciate the calls about how much you love the show and me and Steve, but we're going to try to get to the ones where we can dive in and have a really good discussion about. So you can call us at 313-666-7371. The numbers are down below. I had a really good call last night that asked the question. We were talking about dating apps, and they asked if Schrodinger's cat, check my email, Kyle. How can I? You got to give me your username and password if you want me to check your email, Schrodinger's cat. they asked if somebody has a comment in their dating profile, like prefer black people, you know, whites only, you know, that sort of thing. Is that racist? And I said, no, it wasn't. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I don't think it's racist. I mean, people have preferences, right? I mean, yeah, I got busted for saying that I like certain things, right? So I don't see. But if people want to exclude certain things, I don't find that to be racist. Look, certain people don't want to date certain things, right? They're more attracted to one thing or another. What is wrong with that? That's at least being honest, right? I don't find anything racist about that whatsoever. I thought they're going to ask you, though, is there a dating code? I thought they're going to ask you, is there some kind of code if I want to only date like a white person? Do I put certain letters in to let people know, or do I have to actually like enumerate it out there?
That probably, I'm sure, does exist. I just don't know it. So, Steve, you have a... let's see. I think I missed. Lucy Fur again says, I apologize to Cinnamon Toast Crunch, then. Your hair is better than everyone else's aside from Jimmy's. You're still not letting that go, are you, with Jimmy? I can't believe it. I cannot believe it.
Somebody has a hair fetish.
It's okay, Lucy. I love you anyway. So, Steve has a really crazy ex-roommate. And before we start taking your calls, and I see that the lines are starting to fill up now, Steve is going to once again read from the Chronicles of Crazy Ex-Roommates.
So this is dated May 18th. It is 2 days ago from a crazy ex-roommate who was recently just arrested, which I got on video, which is on my channel. I went to a coffee shop that he, I guess, had been trespassed from before. And so he was right outside when I was there. I was there first. I happen to know the owner, the people that work there. And I told him, I said, is this guy still trespassing me? Because I don't want him to come in here because if there is going to be a problem. And they said, no, he shouldn't be outside. And they arrested him. So what he does is he sits outside and he writes letters to both the coffee shop and to us, right? And he's been gone almost, about a year now, I guess. He's been evicted. He tried taking us to court. He lost. The judge said, well, you don't even have a case. What the hell are you even thinking? But he continues to write letters. And normally he writes letters on you know, like actual paper. This is what he writes to us now. It's on a little, I don't even know what the hell this is. It's a scrap of paper. And if you can look really closely, so you can see that I'm not really making this up, it's mostly double underlined, right? I mean, it's kind of bizarre the way he writes. I mean, can you see that, Dave? That show up?
Yep.
So everything's like underlined, right? So I'm not going to read the whole letter because it's chock full of crazy, but I'm going to read this part two because it tells you his mindset. And I want to get your guys' opinion if you haven't heard of my crazy ex-roommate, if you guys think that he's certifiably insane. I'm just going to start. It's kind of a weird entry point, but like I said, it's kind of weird. He says, I could deal with it in the first grade. My mega genius certified IQ of 246. I was light years ahead of Albert Einstein in the first grade, his IQ of 180. My four PhDs in finance, medicine, physics, and astrophysics at Yale, Harvard, Princeton at the same time. My four dream jobs, titles since 1975, master jeweler, international diamond broker, chairman, president, CEO, international banker, financial director of the Fortune 500 company on Forbes best list. Then Captain Michael, well, I'm not going to read his last name for legal reasons. Top secret government clearance for NASA and the Hubble telescope project in charge 24/7 at three secret locations in Worcester Heights, Darby Court. That's for English people. We can figure that out. Worcester Heights and Darby Court. Is that an English reference? All at the same time. Yeah, sounds like it, doesn't it? I spent over $10 million on my parents, never paid back, in Westport, Connecticut, at Compo Beach, a boat on my million-dollar yachts. I handed Paul Newman $100,000 in cash, all 100s, Ben Franklin's for his charity. But now I still have an injury from my 100,000 series BMW 9 series. And he continues, I'm not even joking here, people. He continues it on a priority mail thingy here. This is what he writes on. So this is, he wrote on the back of that. That's
okay. Epic.
He said, when someone hit me from behind while driving my new BMW 7 series with only 120 miles on it, my 18 speed mountain bike with two flat tires, broken glass, is in public storage. So how will I get that back to where we live? What am I going to say? Walk. I look like Henry Cavill. Is that how you pronounce his name, Superman?
Henry Cavill.
Mm-hmm. Henry Cavill. Mm-hmm. I look like Henry Cavill, Superman. No, he doesn't. Man from Uncle, secret agent, Napoleon Solo. But I cannot fly to where we live like Superman. Why did you keep driving and not stop? Come pick me up, Mike.
Wow.
I had to read. I had to paraphrase a little bit because his writing is really bizarre. But that's
so. Why would you be obligated to pick him up? That's my question. Like, why?
No, I think he still lives here. Because he's still like the last note he gave us. He says like, well, when I get upstairs, you know, I'm gonna do an itemized thing in my room. And I swear to God, he listed every item that was in that room, and he was on point. He got it all right. We went through his stuff when he left, right? I know what he had.
That's funny.
And and he actually itemized it over three pages, and it was pristinely correct.
He also says that this roommate sounds dangerous. Yep, to say the least. Yeah, okay,
Yes.
Let's start off with since we got these people on hold. Let's see what we have with John. John.
Hello?
Hello, John.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
Hey, I'm good, thanks. I'm a big fan of the show. I watch you guys quite a bit, so I'm pretty excited to get to talk to you guys. So I know the issue in the skeptical community and really in political community and everything has kind of been the trans athletes lately. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of calling because I'm kind of up in the air exactly where I am on the issue. I like to kind of be informed and make a decision. Mm-hmm. So for me, the way I look at it is this. If you can transition and be able to take these hormones and not actually have a competitive advantage, then I don't see any reason why to stop anybody from doing that. However, mm-hmm. if it is the case that there is, you know, the legacy effect and, you know, it's taking hormones, as far as I can tell, isn't actually going to, you know, decrease your skeleton structure. You know, your hips are still going to be, you know, the hips that a guy's has, and that definitely gives you a big advantage with running. Mm-hmm. So I understand kind of your muscle mass isn't going to be the same. You are going to be, you know, you're not going to be able to build as much muscle mass. However, if mm-hmm. there still is a competitive advantage, I think it's unfair that they be able to, you know, have that advantage over people who wouldn't have that advantage. So I guess my really kind of question is, you know, am I wrong on that? Is there actually not an advantage? or is that advantage just not really negligible, or it is negligible and not really noticeable, or, you know, kind of how can you guys clarify that up for me?
I don't know that. I don't know, honestly, if we can, because I don't think that there's just enough science back on it yet. And that's why I don't make a decision either way, because I don't think that there's enough information back to determine which one of those are would be the case. I've seen both sides say, or, you know, side with one of those options that you've just put forth, but I don't think it's smart to rush to any sort of conclusion right now, because it's just such a new problem. And and here's another thing. Let me say that sure. Asking that question, if you ask the question, is it fair for this to happen? And we don't have sort of the solid, you know, evidence back yet that it's the case one way or the other. The worst thing you can do is to call that person asking that question something like they're transphobic, or, and that's where the rift lies in today. Asking questions doesn't make you transphobic, especially when the questions don't have solid answers back yet.
Right, I think I'm on the same position as you are, to where, you know, my emotional response is to say, I want everything to be fair. I want people to be able to compete. I want people to be able to feel accepted. So that's my emotional response of, yeah, I want to let them, you know, if all things being equal, you know what I mean? But if all things aren't equal, then it's kind of like my sense of fairness and, you know, to the other people involved in this, is it really fair for them if they do have a competitive advantage? So I guess I was kind of hoping you guys would have a more clear answer, but I think we're kind of in agreement in that there isn't really a clear answer right now. So I guess the thing is, I'm happy, you know, you guys are kind of on the side of, let's slow our roll with, you know, I think you guys are even talking something about, you know, calling everybody a Nazi and, you know, calling everybody a transphobe. It doesn't do anything if you're just calling people randomly it, and it kind of loses its actual, you know, effect on the people who actually are being transphobic, because there are people on this side who are saying they don't want these people to compete. I think it's more from a bigoted angle of they just feel uncomfortable with this as something that's being part of our society now. And those people, I think, are being transphobic. But if you start calling people out randomly who are just honestly saying, look, I don't know, and if it is this way, then it shouldn't be, but I don't know if it is that way, you know, there's a conversation there to be had, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's data to be had. The data is not all there yet. That's why I think the questions are fine to ask, and I think people want to ask these questions. I just don't know if there's any definitive answers yet. I think that it's an ongoing thing, and as you said, people are inquisitive, and these things are in the news, and people will ask honest questions, and it's all about your intent. If you have a question that you ask with honest inquiry, that's fine. I've learned a lot. I've asked my friends, you know, certain questions I probably would never have even thought of to ask anybody else. Right. But I was curious. I had honest intent, and they answered me quite honestly. Right. And I was like, OK, I may not have to agree or disagree, but at least it makes sense. I got an answer out of it. And, you know, it's better than what I knew before. Right. But I think that the data is still not quite there yet. But I agree with you that the people that are vilified for asking questions, they're going after the wrong crowd on that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Because if it is an open question, it needs to be talked about. And like you said, the data needs to be looked at. And we need to kind of come to, like I said, set our emotions aside of what we want to be and figure out what should be based upon the facts and based upon a good conversation of what is the most fair thing. And that's kind of another interesting question, is if it does come out to be there is a disadvantage, it's still kind of a bummer for the people who do want to compete. Well, you know, how do we enable it for them to be able to have a chance? And that's why I think, I mean, this is kind of just an off the top thing, but I think if we find more things that can be co-ed where it doesn't really matter, you know, what sex or what gender you are, like things like American Ninja Warrior, where they have both male and female compete on the same course. You're not competing against somebody who's a different gender or a different sex. You're competing against yourself in the course. So hopefully maybe sports takes that kind of turn where there's more things that are just inclusive by nature, by just how the sports, you know, how it's played, I guess.
Yeah. They just have to change. I mean, yeah. I think they would. You'd have to. I don't know. That's the most honest answer I can give you. I don't know what the answer to that would be. I guess we'll get there when we get there. But I don't want to, you know,
right.
the worst thing in the world you can do is jump to conclusions and speak out, because you don't want, like, you don't want people who are transgender to feel like you're in any way coming after them, because that's something that, you know, happens oftentimes with them anyway. Right. And as somebody that wants to support that community as much as we can, I think it's the safe bet right. to just not come to any sort of conclusion or jump the gun on those sort of answers.
And I think too, I mean, as you know, a skeptic, you know, I watch your guys' show, and you know, I watch, you know, Rationality Rules and American Atheist Experience, and I don't want to say I felt uncomfortable to call in, but I thought, oh, I wonder if I'm going to get a little bit of heat for taking this position, and obviously I didn't. I mean, you guys have been amazing, which it should have been a conclusion I jumped to, but because this is such a hot button topic, and because there has been kind of a backlash. I was kind of worried, like, well, if I do take a position of even questioning, of even saying, well, what if it is unfair, then what? You know, so it's kind of like when you shoot somebody down in a public way like that, it makes everybody else feel a little more uncomfortable about having that conversation. You know what I mean?
Yep. You're absolutely not transphobic for asking the question, though.
No. No. And right. I think certain things should be discussed. They shouldn't be, squelched. I think that people that try to squelch conversation don't add anything to the dialogue. So,
right. And I'm not saying that's specifically what the Atheist Experience did, or that, you know, I'm kind of holding them, you know, to something. Like I watched them this weekend, but it does kind of, I guess I was more just shocked by they took that stance. Not that it was such a strong stance, but it was kind of just like, obviously, you know, Steven took it a certain way to where he kind of felt a little bit attacked, and I don't feel like he was completely wrong on that. You know what I mean? So it was just kind of shocking, but I guess it's maybe just a good wake-up call to say, even your idols, you know, you never hold somebody too high, because nobody's perfect and everybody's going to make a decision or an action that you're not going to disagree with sometimes. So I'm glad to see that both sides were able to say, though, okay, well, let's come back to the table and talk about this and try to reach some kind of consensus. And that's the beauty of the skeptical community, is we're willing to do that.
You have to keep in mind that people make mistakes, even like you right. said, people that you put sort of on a pedestal. No one's perfect. And what I think you can take away from this situation is that at least both sides were able to admit when they got something wrong and were willing to right. Take the steps needed to correct that. And I don't think you can
yeah. –
I mean, that's the way that it should be. So
I think they had a good meeting of the minds. I think that they both took a step forward. I mean, some people criticized the wording wasn't good enough. Some people criticized it was too much. You can't win either way, but I'm at least grateful that the ACA took a step. And I think that Rationality Rules took a step. And what else can you ask for? I mean, when you have two people that are on different sides of the fence trying to have a resolution and trying to work together for a common goal that have almost everything else that they agree on, you know, in common, mm-hmm. And I think that's a positive outcome, right. And I think that people should not be dissing either one of them for what they managed to accomplish. Because, I mean, I know from experience, it was a huge step for the ACA to put out that retraction. That was not an easy thing to do, right. Trust me.
Yeah.
That was huge in their community. So.
And, John, we got to, since our lines are slammed full, we got to move to a different caller. But any last-minute sure. statement you want to make before we close out?
I just want to say, like, I appreciate you guys role modeling that, you guys at the ACA and Rationality Rules role modeling that sense of, let's have a conversation. Even if we disagree, let's not just butt heads and get angry and walk away from each other. Let's have that conversation. And we don't have enough of that right now in our discourse of a lot of different things. So I appreciate you guys doing that. I appreciate them doing that. And hopefully this turns into a good thing of, hey, listen, we disagree as well, and here's how we can have these disagreements. So appreciate what you guys do, and keep it up.
Thank you.
Hey, man, thank you. I always think that it's important to have the conversation, as difficult as some of them are. Not having the consequences for not having conversation is a lot worse than, let's see here. We've got, Chase Holt, and you want to, it looks like, talk about Q Ross's probability motto. Does that mean Hugh Ross?
Yeah, Hugh Ross, he has the, like, Reasons to Believe apologetic group, I think.
Yep. I've had him on.
Mm-hmm. And I've heard...
Good friend of mine in real life.
I don't think he, like, necessarily agrees with him or anything, but I've heard him say that he uses a bunch of like probabilities and all this stuff to say like, oh, the universe was designed by God because this was so improbable or whatever. And I've heard Steve say that he thinks it's logically sound, or his mumbo, well, his wording.
Sort of.
Is that
it's not probably argument. What he talking about his book, Improbable Planet, that I have read, that book?
No, listened to him. He just had a talk on like dogma debates and just his other talks, and he always brings up his probabilities and stuff. And I've heard you say that you like agree that his model for that is sound. You might like not necessarily like agree with the conclusion, but you think like the probability
model. It's not like a horrific argument, right? I think it's not like he's not arguing like a Bayes thing. He's not arguing like Dembski or Myers. He's not arguing like the fine tuning type thing. His argument is nothing like that. If you read Improbable Planet, he's basically arguing that
His evolutionary. I've seen it for his evolutionary probability model, where because I'm an econometrician, I do a lot of like statistics and all that stuff. And his model, every single one of them has a massive endogeneity problem where he's trying to regress and come up with probabilities with unknown observations to try to create a known probability, which is just that is like word for word the endogeneity problem, like misspecification and all that. So I was wondering why you agreed with the probability model.
I'm not talking about
goes against a lot of like statistical rules.
Yeah, that's not the modeling that I'm talking about. You're talking about a regressive model that uses no priors or low priors in some kind of Bayesian type thing.
Yeah, no, that's but even in probability, no matter any probability model you have, use unknown.
Do you know his argument?
Create the probability.
Do you know his actual argument in Do you know his actual argument in Improbable Planet? Because that's not what his argument is. Because that's I'm agreeing with.
I'm not saying I agree with his argument. Part, the model. If you agree with his actual probability model and that you can use statistics like that.
I don't know
his
probability model. Yeah, I have no idea what his probability model is. I have no idea.
Because he always says like the probability of the universe being created is like 10 to the negative whatever. And
no,
all that.
That,
and if
that
you look at it, you can't. I was just wondering because I've seen that you like agree with all that and stuff, but you can't use statistics.
Where did I agree with that?
That goes against a lot of.
What show have you been watching? I don't remember ever agreeing to any of those things. I've never agreed.
I don't know what show it was, but you've like talked about Hugh Ross and you said, I agree with like him saying the universe is like this improbable, but you don't agree that means a God, but you agree with like him saying everything is so improbable and life is improbable and all this stuff.
No, that wasn't me.
So you never agreed to that?
I've never said anything of the sort. I didn't agree with this argument. I didn't think it was a horrific argument, and that was our argument from Improbable Planet. But if you don't want to discuss Improbable Planet, it wasn't an argument from like a statistical probability model. It was an argument that there has been five major things in history and time points in history. There was a cataclysmic event that should have wiped out all life, or at least the vast majority of life. And each time life seemed to make strides and come back and even come to the point where we have intelligent creatures nowadays. If it wasn't for like the Chicxulub, whatever freaking meteor that hit Central America that 65 million years ago, I mean, that was a huge catastrophic event. There was some also some volcanic activity that was required. There was also some heavy bombardment in the late heavy bombardment period that he talks about. He talks about all those things, which were such huge events that should have wiped out all life. And yet, because of those five events, now there is not just life, but there's life that is creative and intelligent and cognitive of their own abilities and aware self-awareness. So it's not really like a fine-tuning argument, but it is something you have to think about. Five cataclysmic events, and not only did it not wipe us out, it made us that it gave us the opportunity to be us where we are today. Now, again, it's all how you look at things. And I'm not saying that I'm agreeing with his argument, but I've heard worse, right? I mean, so, and it's a good book. It's a well-written book.
I don't care about like a philosophical argument or anything. I was just wondering what your views were, because he always says, just I'm not in his books or anything, but in his videos and talks he does, how improbable like life is and how improbable the universe was. And I've just heard you before like make comments on like some of the videos and stuff he's been in. So I was just wondering.
Yeah, that's what I'm referring to, though. I'm not talking about like the people that argue that life is improbable when it comes to like, a protein is coming out of nowhere is 10 to the 400th power, and you know, the first cell is this.
That
no, that,
that's
all
yeah. talk. Like the flagellum that's, type that's of argument thing, if you know what that is.
Flagellum. No, I don't agree with any of that stuff, man. That's all post hoc analysis.
Well, yeah, Chase, okay, that's what I was wondering. Okay, cool. I thought you were agreeing with that type of stuff.
Thank you, Chase, for calling again. You take it easy, man.
All right, could I ask Kyle you one real quick question?
Yeah.
Real fast, just yes or no.
Sure.
Do you think is the better queen, Beyonce or Britney?
I think they. Oh, I'm gonna have to go Beyonce.
It's a trap. It's a trap. Don't answer.
I have to go Beyonce. Heated comments in the live chat, but thank you guys.
Yeah, man. Man, yeah, asking the tough questions. Okay. Let's see.
I get asked about Hugh Ross, and you got asked about who's the bigger queen. Okay.
I'm telling you, my question was a lot harder. You didn't leave a name on the screener, but who are we on the line with?
Is it me?
I think it is.
Oh, it's Nate.
Hey.
Hey.
What's up?
Can you hear us?
Hello?
Hello?
May. I think the call dropped.
Is that May?
I couldn't tell. It was
Are we out of
No. Nikki? Just call back. If you just called in a second ago, call back and we'll get you on. I couldn't make out who it was though, because they didn't leave a name. Nikki.
Hello. Hi.
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 Can you hear me? Oh, hi. I don't really have anything to argue about or anything. I actually just wanted to know your guys's favorite conspiracy theory, or like one that's like outworldly that you would like totally believe or something. Sorry, I'm like really nervous. Again.
I think aliens exist. I don't think that they're little green men that fly in spaceships, but a conspiracy that I believe that there is something to the JFK conspiracy. I don't think that is how the government said that it went down. And so that would be the one that I have that I would subscribe to. Steve?
I'm going to probably go with the United States probably has some type of weapon that is not very conventional, such as along the lines of weaponizing weather manipulation, earthquakes, or electromagnetic pulse. I think that we have something in our arsenal that's pretty unconventional that uses, you know, natural phenomenon or something to cause destruction to our enemies. I think that's completely plausible.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, interesting.
What's yours?
Well, I mean, I like that. Along with that, I like Jilly's idea that our moods determine whether or not the weather changes. That weird thing that she believes. I like that one.
Oh, our mood. Oh, but no, I don't believe it's like a psychic thing. I don't believe like we can wheel a hurricane or something like that. I don't think it's like that much on that scale, but. But I mean, yes. I think that, for example, even technology, I think we know if we nuke a certain like seismic line or something, we can do some damage over here. If we do something over here, we can cause damage somewhere else. I think we have a lot more control over if we really had to go annihilate an enemy. I think it'd be a far more efficient than just like piling with nukes. I think we would have technology that people didn't know about prior to. But I can't discuss that because I had class.
Yeah, I think a lot of
this. I can't get into that. I really did have classified clearance, by the way.
Yeah, I think a lot of the UFOs that we see are just like experiments from like other countries. I don't know. I think that would just be super interesting. We found out that all of it was just like experiments.
Yeah. Could be. I think there's all kind of that stuff like that goes on that we don't know about. Steve knows about it, but.
Well, I mean, I just don't understand that the government has lied. I mean, we had a junket come out, a press release saying that we were doing one operation and we were doing something completely different, which was relating to chemical weapons. So, nerve gas.
Wow.
So I know from experience that they're not going to put out exactly what we're doing in the military. It just doesn't happen. Oh, yeah. I've seen it happen. Because we're like going, no, that's not what we're doing. Terrifying. We're not. They're like, oh, the. USS Truxton is going to be doing law enforcement operations over here. Well, no, not the case.
Sheriff Elias.
Can't tell you exactly what we're doing.
I mean, there's that whole government. It was a government section that was actually financed by a billionaire, and it was basically to find UFOs. And there's like hundreds of hours of quote unquote evidence of like flying saucers and like evidence of UFOs that they've actually have like cameras on, like. We have physical proof, like testimonies.
Yeah, I think they exist, but I don't think we've ever been visited.
Oh, shit. Yeah, they may be UFOs. UFOs are a real thing, but that doesn't mean that they're from other planets. Like, it could be from another country who has, you know, testing stuff. I don't think it's little green men. But, Nikki, thank you so much for calling in and chatting with us.
He really does think they're little green men, though.
And I hope you have a good evening.
Yeah, you too. I love you guys. I love the show. Keep doing
love you too.
Thank you.
Bye. Okay, now we're going to talk about free speech with Adam.
Hey, guys. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so recently, Miles Power covered the guy who, I can't remember if he drinks turpentine or what else. He does urine therapy.
Danny Sunford.
And YouTube actually solid and took down his channel. Not Miles Powers.
It's Sunfruit Dan.
Yeah, and his channel got wiped away. And I think it brings up some interesting ideas because maybe Jilly Juice is next. I don't know. Thanks, Jeff Holliday, for kind of keeping the heat on her. And the Pathos, who's the lady,
Katie.
You know her name. I can't think of her name, who's covered the lawsuit. Yeah, and so this raises a lot of questions. Obviously YouTube is not truly free speech. It's a platform. It has terms of service, but, to what degree do you think YouTube is responsible for the speech that's out there? And do you think this is a path we're going to see continue on in the future?
I hope so, because there are two ways you can look at this, this situation. You can look at it like, people should have the right to say whatever they want. You know, free speech, absolutist, that despite the harm it may cause other people, they still have the right to say that. So, for example, with Danny Glass, he should be able to come on and say what he wants to about drinking turpentine and the health benefits for that. And it's up to the other person or the person that's watching on the other side of the screen to have the common sense to not do that if it's harmful. However, I think that as we've seen in many cases, a lot of people don't have that common sense. And a lot of people don't think before they do things. They see something on YouTube and they think it's the gospel. Same thing with the sovereign citizen people who see, saying, oh, I'm not driving, I'm traveling, and think that that's actually going to work and they can get by with that. I think that you should be allowed to say whatever you want if it's not harmful to, well, let me walk that back.
Free advocating speech, for drinking turpentine is rather harmful.
absolutely. But what I'm saying is, like, free speech is applicable to the government, right? So the government can't tell you what you can and can't say. With these platforms, I do think it Facebook or, you know, YouTube, Facebook, those sort of platforms do feel a certain sense of responsibility, because let's say somebody drank turpentine. Let's say a teenager drank turpentine because they watched Danny Glass do this, and that teenager died. Or if there were many cases of that, because they saw it on YouTube, I think that would be, you know, that would be sort of, they should feel a sense of responsibility, because if you have somebody that's advocating something dangerous like that, I think it is your responsibility to swoop in and shut that down. Now, if he's just spouting stuff about like crazy beliefs that he has, or, you know, that there's aliens out somewhere else, that doesn't hurt anybody. But telling people that they can have all these health benefits and coming across like you know what you're talking about and you're putting facts out there and statistics, sometimes people can't can't suss out which one is credible and which ones aren't. And I think it's on the YouTube did a good job, a good thing with that. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not a free speech absolutist. I know it's kind of hard. I do advocate for free speech, but I think absolutism goes a little bit too far. So I'm not on Kyle's page there. But YouTube, it's its own entity, right? They're a private organization that's held publicly, or they try to make it even to a public utility because it's so large now. But it is a privately owned organization. But here's the thing: I think they do have a culpability when they allow videos, certain videos on their channel. They have a moral and ethical duty to make sure that people are not putting out videos that are going to cause harm, that have a potential to cause harm, whether that be physical or even mental. When you have people putting out there that, hey, you should go eat a Tide Pod or drink turpentine, or, you know, is it things with like burning your skin with compressed air and all this other stuff I've seen. Kids watch these things, right? And I just don't think that is applicable to what YouTube should have on their channel. If it's something that we know is going to harm or has the potential to cause harm, then I think absolutely YouTube has a right. I mean, they have a right to put anything they want on or take anything they want off, but I think they have a moral obligation and duty to not allow that stuff on there. That's not a free speech issue to me. And I think things even like Flat Earth, I don't think something should be that allowed. The reason being is when the data is so overwhelmingly clear, when there's something that is so abundantly to be the case, such as the Earth being round, then anything on YouTube that even goes against that, it's clearly going to be incorrect. I mean, it's not a matter of if somebody has a different opinion. It's not a matter of somebody has a wild scientific discovery. It is they're putting out gross misinformation. And I think that an entity such as YouTube does have some kind of ethical considerations to what they have on their channel. Now, do I think that has a potential for harm? Possibly good channels? Yes. But hopefully that they don't go too far on that, because I've seen where they've actually gone after channels that shouldn't have been gone after. But do I think they should take those ones down, like Drinking Turpentine? Yeah, I got no problem with that.
You know, I just thought of something while we were talking about this, because I was taking in everything, kind of augmenting my view. And what rose up to my mind is kind of newspapers of years past. Like, what if a newspaper, because everyone's kind of their own publicist now, they're their own reporter. You know, you see a lot of independent people, you know, Kyle Kalinske, all these other people who are rising up and doing their own reporting and being like, hey, come listen to me. And that's what these people like Danny are telling people, like, hey, listen to me. I'm a health professional, which he has no degrees. So
right, and that's dangerous. That's dangerous.
I think what we
when they have,
he's
they,
very
they,
dangerous.
They have, I think we don't have.
He yeah. commands some authority when he has a YouTube channel with hundreds of thousands of people, maybe. And I think what we really need, this is a call, like, we need a lot of younger people in government, nothing against older people, but people who understand the internet and it's like, hey, this is the way we disseminate information now. It used to be newspapers, then it was, you know, the evening news, and now the dissemination of information. So what culpability would we put onto a newspaper in the 1950s spreading false information? In the 1990s, what culpability would we put on a news channel spreading false information? So in the 2020s, we're almost at, you know, what culpability do we put on these people broadcasting themselves on the internet spreading false information? And to what extent can we show it's false? And I think this is a big discussion we have to have, because I really feel it's only going to get worse. I mean, anti-vax is just the, I feel like I'm quoting the Joker. He's just the beginning.
And YouTube and these social media platforms have every right to take the action they feel necessary. Now, whether or not that's what they ought to do is a completely different story. But if they don't like the sweater that I'm wearing right now and they want to boot me off, they can absolutely do that. That's their right, because, you know, it's their platform. And so I think that's a good question that you asked, because a lot of people conflate the two. They think that if you're taking somebody off of YouTube, that's somehow inhibiting their First Amendment freedom of speech. And it's not at all. It has nothing to do with the First Amendment or anything. And it's just frustrating when people conflate those two things.
Right.
I agree. Yeah, exactly right. Thank you guys for your thoughts on this.
Yeah, man. Yep. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, the free speech is for so you can give grievances to the government without fear of reprisal. You can address have grievances addressed. It's not that you can say whatever the hell you want on YouTube.
You turned off my ability to leave a comment. How dare you step on my First Amendment right?
You're censoring my free speech. What's wrong with you?
Oh, it's like, shut the fuck up. Hi, Sandra.
So I could go on your video and put my comment on your video.
How's it going?
Hi, Sandra. Good. Is this Sandra?
My Sandring.
Oh, it's a Sandring. Hey, Sandring. What's up, buddy?
So you wanted to know if we're going to be united or divided as we go. What do you mean?
Yeah, it seems like even from just a little while ago, a few years ago, 5 years or so ago,
it seems like more and more discourse between people is shutting down. People are polarizing to one side or the other and not really wanting to talk to each other. You know, I get attacked personally when I try to make an argument. Instead of somebody taking issue with my argument, they're like, oh, you're just a fascist Nazi and you deserve to be killed.
Trump supporter. You're and a Trump supporter.
Here's the thing with that. Yeah. Here's the thing with that. This is what you need to people need to take away from the schism that's going on now. There are people that love to argue for the sake of arguing. There are people who are fine with being dishonest, are fine with throwing labels out, are fine with saying that people are something that they're not. We've seen that. We've seen that here. When I myself was called homophobic, that is a true thing that happened. That's not me being funny. That's a true thing that happened. And you really got to take a step back and think. Now, most of the stuff that's going on now are coming from a few loud people that don't care about what the truth is. If somebody is really the way that they say they are, we'll take the transphobic thing again. That word has been thrown about by so many people in the past couple weeks. People were calling Rationality Rules that, Steve that. There was a list put out with a bunch of our names on it. People like Rachel Oates and Jimmy and Vice Rhino and Genetically Modified Skeptic.
Shannon?
Yeah.
Shannon?
Shannon. People who have been nothing but allies to the LGBTQ plus community. I myself was on that list. And I'm a member of that community. So I have to just take a step back and realize that no matter what you do and no matter what your intentions and no matter where your heart's placed at, there will always be people who are fine lying, fine throwing away around these terms at people who have been everything but the opposite of what they call them. And you just have to let these people rant and rave and fizzle out, because eventually they will. You can't hold on to a lie like that for long before people start investigating and looking and seeing what you're about, taking the time to look at the things that these people are referencing, the shows as a whole. Look at the body of work of a person and really find out who they are. And you'll be able to see their character, and you'll be able to see the character of the other person who doesn't mind labeling somebody transphobic, who absolutely clearly isn't. It's a retaliation for people not being as outraged at something as they demand that you are. And I won't alter, my path. I've been on this show, especially, has been nothing but a voice for the LGBTQ plus community, and will continue to be so. And I won't let people who try to, divide or sow disagreement that explodes into dividing, a community. It won't happen. We're too strong for that. We've got too much work to do, and you just have to roll your eyes at the people that do this sort of stuff.
Yep.
So you just think it'll burn itself out and we'll actually eventually start talking to each other again?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's hopefully, but what happens is when one thing burns out, another thing crops up, right? They always seem to find something to ping on.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, when you start throwing around these terms to people that are clearly not, I mean, what good does that do anyone? I mean, you're just isolating people that would normally be, right there walking beside you in a gay parade, right? I would have no problem walking in a gay parade. It wouldn't bother me at least, right? So, I mean, it makes no sense that they're doing damage to their own cause by alienating the very people that are supporting them.
Yeah, I've participated in Pride Parade in Seattle. That's a hell of an event. It's just the perception, especially for a lot of people, is that we're talking to each other less and less. We're not listening to arguments. I see more examples of that on online, and I do hesitate to use, you know, the online world as actual gauge for what's really happening in the world. I drive across this country, and I don't see in my personal interactions with people this kind of vitriol that we see online. And probably has something to do with you can be a little bit more anonymous behind the screen. But I was wondering if you thought it was going to get better or get worse.
It's going to get better. It always gets better. And in the middle of these things, it seems like it's, you know, you get stressed out and you get tired of defending, you know, that you're not something that, that, you know, people try to label you as. And at the end of the day, this world is getting better on a daily basis. These things pop up and they happen, and you just have to stick to your guns. I have a mission and a drive that I want to see happen, and I don't let this sort of thing distract me. It tried to with the platforming thing, and people eventually will see where your heart's placed, and they can look at your past and see how you've acted in the past, and by what you say and what you do, and they'll be able to judge you as your character. And there will always be people who try to distract from that, but you can't. The best revenge is success, I think, and you just have to keep focused on that and not let the naysayers detract you from trying to do the right thing.
All right, I just wanted to get your opinion on
sure.
that. Have a great day.
Awesome.
It's
thank
great
you,
to talk to
you. You too, buddy. Thank you, bud.
Okay, let's see. Okay. Talk about Area 51.
Ooh, I can't talk about that. I'm sworn to secrecy, remember?
Dana.
Hello?
Hey, Dana.
Hello?
Yep. Hi, you want to talk about Area 51?
Yeah. So I just wanted to kind of set the record straight, or I guess they dropped some truth bombs on it.
Uh-oh.
Is that I've kind of noticed with the flat Earth community and conspiracies, they kind of go hand in hand. And one day, you know, it would be interesting if you guys kind of ask them some prelim questions of, you know, do you think people are following you? Do you think there are conspiracies in this world? Do you think there are aliens? Because they kind of go hand in hand with flat earthers. And with the alien community, there's a lot of people that strongly believe it. And where my Area 51 is coming to is my expertise in it, being a contractor for Lockheed Martin and Northrop Grumman, is nothing's going on at Area 51. It's basically a site for testing airplanes. That's all it is. They take airplanes from Plant 42 in Palmdale, and they disassemble them in Palmdale, and then they reassemble them in Area 51, which is the coordinates. The government takes land, and they quadrant it into sections. And that section is 51, there's 52, 53, 54, 56, there's a million of them. That one section in Nevada is Area 51, and that they reassemble from Plant 42 from the Air Force Base, reassemble them in Area 51, and basically just test flight them. But there's such a strong conspiracy theories about it, that there's aliens, that there's all kinds of crazy stuff going on there, but there's nothing. The majority of the time, the base is empty. There's
Dana.
Nobody there, usually 10 months
Dana,
out of the year.
Let me say, Dana, look, I appreciate what you're doing, but you're not fooling anyone, okay? This is the government put you up to this to call in and throw us off the trail, and we are not buying it, sir. How dare you?
Yeah, I mean, it might be dead now, but I mean, you're from Lockheed Martin, so you know that Groom Lake was actually you know, somewhere that they wanted to have Lockheed Martin to, in order to test the original reconnaissance program for the U-2, the SR-71 Blackbird, the F-117, and other types of vehicles that nobody had ever seen before, right? These were alien type of things, and you needed a very long runway in the middle of nowhere, and that was a very natural flat lake that they decided, hey, we could make this into a landing strip. But back in the day when people first saw, you know, like a flying wing or an F-117 or something, F-117. They didn't know what the hell it was. They probably did think it was alien.
Yeah, exactly. And what a lot of people don't understand is there's Lockheed Martins all over the world. There's Northrop Grumman's all over the world. They're everywhere. There's bases everywhere. There's a project I'm working on for Northrop Grumman where out in Bakersfield, they have it's basically two football fields, the size of two football fields, that's underwater tanks, and they're massive. And all they do is crash jet engines into the water to see how they react to explosions. If you saw it, it would be amazing. It's something to see how big these tanks are, and just them to dump a jet inside of it and explode it, just to see how it reacts to certain ammunition, to see how it reacts to certain things.
And can you get video of that for us?
People don't.
That would be pretty cool.
What's that?
Can you get video of that for us?
No. There's definitely none of that going on. The only way I prove it to people, I show them my credit cards that have all the company names on them. My blueprints and drawings that I have, they're not really classified. They black out and stencil out certain areas for contractors and stuff like that. I've gone to Area 51 three times for HVAC and for fire suppression.
Are they going to come kidnap you for telling us this stuff?
It's dead.
Are they going to come kidnap you for telling us this stuff?
You're not going to, like, disappear off the planet tomorrow, are you?
No, not at all. No, I live in Los Angeles, and I commute to Palmdale out to Plant 42. We have an office out there. We're there every day. And, yeah, I go out to Northrop Grumman out in Century City and Torrance and Lockheed Martin out there to their headquarters. We service them everywhere. Definitely not
going to
disappear anytime soon.
Okay. Well, good. Thanks for calling, Dana. And just remember that you're not fooling anyone, Dana. We know you were put up by this. We know it's not your fault. You didn't have a choice. But
chill. Yeah,
you're not fooling us.
Well, one quick thing. Sure. The only thing that's weird, and my wife laughs at me, is every night when I go to bed, I have to have your guys's YouTube channel playing in the background on my YouTube. Some noise playing. So I always have the
nothing
bass
weird
going
about that
on,
all, man.
Whether it's flat or something like that. So
Does it give you nightmares?
Fall asleep, but I really do enjoy it.
Does it give you nightmares?
So is he saying that we bore him?
No, it actually makes me debate a lot of people about stuff that I really have no interest in or dog in a fight, like about religion or flat earth. Like, I could care less about it, but I'm seeing myself kind of engage more people into this, even though I still don't understand, and maybe Steve could explain to me, like explaining something to a child, if you would, a kind, like when Aaron, you know, is trying to explain that to Kent about a kind, that it really blows over my head, like the difference between a kind, because when I tell people, like, yeah, you know, there's, you know, that's a kind of a monkey, or that's a kind Ooh. Of this.
Have
or that,
you seen?
I know that.
Have you seen Prophet of Zod's video?
Not a kind.
Have you seen Prophet of Zod's video on this?
Whose video?
Prophet of Zod.
No, I haven't. I haven't.
Look for that right after you close out of here, because he does a video on this. It's called Windows and Doors, and it will explain the best way to sort of shut that argument down.
Okay.
But thanks, Dana.
All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Sorry, I'm trying to tell a raging atheist that I don't really like the fact that Skyout's a cunt, but Skyout says he doesn't apparently like the fact that I'm gay. So I was trying to type while I tell somebody by that I don't really like the fact that he's a cunt, but we really can't help that.
Is Skyout that guy that thinks he's funny, the comedian dude that does videos? I think
Have we ever talked to Skyout?
I think I watched one of his videos the other day on the Geek Room. I think they had a Skyout video. He was trying to be funny. It wasn't coming across.
Well, now I don't like the fact that he's not very memorable.
A comedian?
That's what I'll say. Yeah. Okay. Now we're going to go to Dan. Hi, Dan. You're on the air with Kyle and Steve.
Hi,
Dan. You're on the air with Kyle and Steve. I'm trying to sound like a radio guy.
Hi there. Yeah, no, it's Vivian. Just wanted to...
Oh, it's Vivian.
Try and bring... Okay. Yeah, Vivian. Wanted to try and, like, maybe bring together, like, the two halves on the whole... rationality rules, whatever, controversy, right? Mm-hmm. Because it seems to me that, like, what's actually happened is sort of like a hysterical response to, like, the use of the term transphobia, right? And this kind of, like, viewing of it being a label of deliberate maliciousness, right? Which is not necessarily what we mean when we say transphobia. Like, the ACA statement originally didn't label Woodford as being transphobic. They said that he had expressed transphobic views, right? Which is like the view of myself and the view of like quite a few other people in the trans community, right? Especially like Essence of Thought, you know, the person who made the videos like refuting him in the beginning. And when we say like somebody expresses transphobic views, this doesn't necessarily mean that it comes from a place of malice, but that it is a view of trans people specifically, right? That causes harm, right? That produces harm. Like, if you honestly believe that like black people like commit more crime and therefore we should bar them from like public areas in order to protect white people, like we would rightfully say that you had like racist views. And it doesn't really matter like how sincerely those views are being held or like whether you really love black people, you just believe that this particular thing about them means that you should like restrict their rights in a certain way, right? We would still say that is like a racist view.
Yeah, let's go just a little bit at a time here so we can sort of keep up. I completely understand what you're saying, Vivian. This is how I would approach it. If somebody that you know is like you don't feel is transphobic, maybe they're expressing a view that is like you said, maybe perceived as transphobic. I would say instead of saying like that's a transphobic view, knowing that that person's not transphobic, maybe just talk to them and explain to them why they're incorrect. Like you said with the stats thing with the black people and crime, I wouldn't say that somebody that's saying that if I knew them and I knew that this person absolutely wasn't racist, I wouldn't say that they have a racist viewpoint. I would just show them why they're incorrect. I think it's the issue is with that term, that word transphobic, and when it's thrown at, even if you're not intentionally labeling that person as transphobic, like you're just wanting to say they have a transphobic view. What happened when the ACA, you're correct, what happened with the ACA when they released their statement? Even though it didn't call Woodford transphobic, they were saying he expressed transphobic views. He was labeled as transphobic.
Which he did, because, right? Like,
yeah, no, you're right. They didn't say that.
If you're a better example is probably like, you know, with the debate around like gay people and gay marriage and all that sort of thing, mm-hmm. right? When mm-hmm. people argue against restricting gay marriage or abortion mm-hmm. of children by gay couples, right? Because they say things like, you know, gay people can't raise a child properly or gay people aren't like safe around children or whatever. It really doesn't matter what the intent behind their views is. Like that is still homophobia, right? And that's the same kind of thing that Woodford did. And I feel like the visceral reaction to accepting that you have a view that is like bigoted in this way is like what kind of presents these kind of halves coming together and like having an honest discussion about the issue, which is a complicated issue, trans people in sport.
But I don't think it prevents that kind of
conversation because it just turns into like an attempt to like portray oneself as a martyr you know?
I don't think I would say that that person's view with the gay marriage thing. I don't think that I would say that person's view, intent is everything for me. I think that if that person was coming and asking questions, or they were coming from a place that I knew wasn't homophobic, I couldn't say that it was homophobic. It's just somebody that's incorrect and should be sort of steered towards the correct information. I think, like I said a second ago, even though I may understand where it's coming from.
A phobia is an irrational fear of a thing, right?
Right, but
in the case of the gays, it's like a fear of gays being pedophiles. And in the case of, like, Woodford, it's a fear of, he used quite alarmist rhetoric, you know, trans people ruining women's sport. I don't want to see the day when a Y chromosome, like, dominates women's sport. Like, it's this irrational fear of this thing happening. Right.
Let me ask you this.
It's connected to trans people. It's definitionally transphobia.
Do you think rationality rules is transphobic?
Do I think he is transphobic? I think if he holds these views, he has some transphobic views, and that would probably make him transphobic. Yeah, I don't think he has deliberate malice. But
that's where my issue with. Comes in with that word. Even if somebody may hold some views, let's say home views that are homophobic, I think if I knew that they weren't homophobic, I couldn't say that. I wouldn't use that word, because people infer a lot of things. Like when that statement comes out, when you said that they never said that he was transphobic. They just said he had transphobic views. That's absolutely correct. That is exactly what happened. But what was the takeaway from that? The takeaway from that was that he was transphobic, not that he held a couple of views that were, transphobic, and that he himself wasn't.
There's a huge distinction there.
Yeah, and so that's
I don't think there is. I think if you have views that are transphobic, views that are bigoted, views that are like homophobic, you are at that time being a bigot of some kind. Like whether this comes from a place of like hate or not. It's like irrelevant to the harm it does. But this is precisely my point. The point that I made at the start of the call, right, is that like these two sides are using different definitions of this word transphobia, right? And the critics of Woodford are saying that his views are like definitionally transphobic because this is the way that they are false and how they cause harm. And the proponents of Woodford are saying, how could you possibly call him transphobic when there's no malice? So I feel like both sides are like talking past each other because they're not addressing what each other are saying.
The malice part.
Let me ask you this, because I do agree and tend to everything. Rationality Rules came out with a video just the other day. Did you watch that video? It was like 5 minutes long.
I've seen his apology video. Yeah. Oh,
yes,
wait,
that one. Now, here's the way I look at intent. A person who's transphobic is not going to make that kind of video. A person who's transphobic is going to go and just continue to try to bash and try to be bigoted toward a particular group, right? You don't see people capitulating and saying, look, I made some errors in my video, which I think by now everybody agrees there was errors in that video. There's some things that were hyperbolic. There was a discussion to be had that was completely overshadowed by those things, right? But he was willing to listen to people. He was willing to do mea culpa that I didn't get the science right, because I personally think the science is inconclusive right now, which some people have called that transphobic, right? Because I think that the science is inconclusive. But he was willing to at least talk to people about it, right? And he was at least willing to make a video. That is not the action of somebody you want to label as transphobic. That is not your enemy.
Right.
No. And I don't think it is about being an enemy. It's about saying, if we just remove the word transphobia from the situation, right, and instead we say something like, you have some very wrong views that are harmful to a particular group of people, right, which is essentially what I would understand to be transphobia, but obviously we're using different definitions of that word here, right?
I think so too.
If we just say that, the intent of saying these views are transphobic is not to say you're a horrible person, it's to say that these views are bad and maybe you should reassess them.
Right,
yeah, and I get that, and I agree with you that it's used differently, yeah, very much so. There, but you got to look at it from our point of view, right? Yeah, exactly. The people that are not in your circles that don't really have that kind of terminology. I'm aware that terminology exists, right? I mean, I've had conversations with Brittany on this very thing, and she explains that, you know, they in the more liberal type of communities, they are much more apologetic. They're much more sensitive. They're much more cognitive of the words they use and even some of the terminologies they use between each other. It doesn't really have any codification yet. It's still being worked out, right? But at least they are aware that the way they use words like transphobic is not quite the way that what the outside of perceiving. But what's happening is when you use that label to label somebody like Rationality Rules, all these people that don't understand, you're using it maybe differently in your way, they're seeing you stigmatize him. They're seeing you try to put him as somebody opposed to you, as an enemy, and it's divisive. It doesn't do anybody any good to use that kind of terminology outside of the community that you're in. Can you at least agree with that? Does that make sense?
Right. I mean,
this is
essentially exactly what I've been saying from the start, right? That we're both working with different definitions, and we don't realize the definitions that other people are working with, which is like the whole point of my call is to say, you know, this is the definition that we are working with, and maybe we can think about the terminology we use in the conversation, but that, you know, maybe you guys can also understand that this is not our original contention, right? We're not saying Woodford is malicious, right? Woodford is hateful. We're saying Woodford has poor views that are harmful to trans people.
I completely agree with you there. And even I understand that wasn't, you know, using those, that sort of language wasn't the intention, or the result wasn't the intention. And this is just a case of people being on different pages, but hopefully with conversations like this, we can start to work towards.
I don't think there's a lot of malice ground or ill intent with like somebody like yourself. I don't hear any malice in your what you're saying, right? I don't feel like you're trying to go after somebody. I don't feel like you're trying to be attacking somebody. But other people will use that term in that type of way. It's a weaponized usage. So, but you're very much correct. I do believe very strongly that you and other people use that term quite differently than other people, and there's a disconnect there. Sure.
I think this is like a problem with media, right? Because generally when you report on somebody being bigoted or whatever in some way, it's right. It's the Phelps family with their God hates F words. I don't know if I can say that on your show, but God hates gay people signs, right? And stuff like that. It's the most extreme examples of like of bigotry and hatred in like the Western world, at least. You know, we recognize that there are like differing degrees of like transphobia and homophobia and stuff, which maybe if you're not particularly acquainted with trying to tackle these issues, you just sort of like, as soon as you hear the word homophobia, you think of the Westboro Baptist Church, right? And as soon as you think of racism, you think of the KKK, right? But they, you know,
exactly.
there are levels of these things that we still recognize as being racist, still recognize as being transphobic or whatever. But like we can talk about the terminology, but I think it's really important for maybe these two sides to just sort of like I don't know if Essence, who is doing the videos and stuff, is gonna change their mind on whether what Woodford said was transphobic, right? Because that is the definition that they're working with. But maybe on your side and Woodford and whatever, maybe to reach out and say, look, I understand you're not attributing malice to me with this word, you know?
Yeah, and here's the thing: like when people use words like homophobia, transphobia, racism, they don't hear it in the sense that it may mean causing unintentional harm. They hear it as hate. Like, okay, with that whatever phobia word, that means that this person's hating on another group of people. That, you know, that's the default there, and that's where the big miscommunication is.
That's not what we're talking about when we talk about things like institutional racism in the United States, for example, right? We're not talking about abject hatred of black people. We're talking about a system that is racist, that like harms black
people. That's what everyone hears. Yeah, I know that's not what you're saying. That's what everyone hears.
Yeah, I mean, when somebody like somebody like myself who hears these terms, right? There's a visceral reaction, right? There's going to be a what's called a backfire effect, right? That when I hear people using those kind of pejoratives, it doesn't foster communication, doesn't foster dialogue, right? Because and I know this is the same way what rationality rules is. It doesn't do anything to add to the dialogue by calling somebody these positions, because when we take these positions just as seriously, right? When somebody says something homophobic or transphobic, to me, I think, oh, wow, okay, look at, we got Matt Powell's and we got, you know, Steven Anderson's, we have Matt Slick's, we have people that are actually homophobic and bigoted and prejudiced and just full of spite and vinegar. Those are the people that are the enemy of the trans community, right? And when you're using the same word to describe both types of people, that's when we go, no, that doesn't work for us, right? Because you're putting us in the same category just because we might have a disagreement. And I'm saying in general, not just me or Stash Rastron and Rules, but anybody who just disagrees with somebody, you're putting them in the same exact category with those vile, vile people that I think every one of us would, you know, would not spit on if they were on fire.
That's a list you don't want to be on.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a list you don't want to be on.
I mean, I understand that. I mean, but these are just, these are just the definitions that have been used, like, in the literature, like, academically, in conversations about gender and oppression and so on for decades. And, you know, and it seems to me that you chaps are, like, ever so slightly behind on that. And I don't mean that
sound insulting
or whatever. Like, you just have a very simplistic understanding of what these terms are understood to mean.
We're not saying that you're wrong. Here's what we're saying, though, is that even though you may be correct in your terminology usage there, the vast majority of people that hear these things are going to take it completely different. So the question then becomes, do we wait for them to catch up before we start using this terminology, or do we change the terminology in a more constructive way that's not going to sort of sow all of this chaos?
Right.
And I don't know the answer.
Well, what would your suggestion be? What would be the appropriate way to sort of like address transphobic views? But
I can tell you that
without saying that they are transphobic views.
I can tell you that you go, whether you're going to make a video or you're going to go to the person, I would go to the person. But if you're going to make, like, let's say you're going to make an overreaching video that's going to just cover something that somebody said, like for rationality rules. In the video, I would say, I understand based on rationality rules history, his past videos that he's put out, that he is a ally in the grand scheme of things. He got these things wrong. Here's where his mistakes were. Here's what he could have done better. And I just want to make sure that, you know, rights are, or wrongs are righted. I don't think that you have to label anybody anything if you know that they're not actively working against you. Now, if this was somebody that, like Matt Powell, who is a complete homophobe and has a disdain for gay people, you wouldn't take that approach. But if it's somebody, let's say Steve came to me and said, you know what, I have a question about whether or not there's two same-sex parents are better than a heterosexual couple. Like, I have some questions on that. I know Steve is not homophobic. He may genuinely have questions on if there's science behind whether or not two gay parents is as healthy for a child as a heterosexual couple. I wouldn't say, well, Steve, those are homophobic.
You can't ask that question.
I would just explain to Steve, you know, why that's incorrect, because I know Steve's an ally.
Mm. But this isn't what rationality rules did. He didn't come with questions. He came with a conclusion, a very harmful conclusion. And during the making of that video, he also supported some of those people that you would say you wouldn't spit on, right? Ben Shapiro.
That's kind of a genetic fallacy.
A lot of his content is fine, but when he gets talking about Ben Shapiro, he's extremely vitriolic sometimes.
But he came out and said he was not exactly.
He said that Ben Shapiro, love him or hate him, that he, you know, Ben Shapiro is a good spokesperson for whatever his position is. He's very good at debating. I'm not a big fan of his, okay, but I mean, I've listened to some things that he has said. He had some really good quips, right? I mean, he's a very articulate individual. And I think that's what Rationality Rules was kind of pointing out. But I agree with you. I think Rationality Rules came to some some overreaching conclusions. He didn't have the data to support his conclusions. How about that? Is that something most people
didn't have the data to support his conclusions. But also just like the rhetoric and the people he cited and
rhetoric,
the clips he used and the conclusion he came to were all things that like contribute to attitudes that are like prevalent in this discussion that are directly contribute to like harassment and poor ideas about trans people, right? Which are then like used as justification to like harass them.
Sure. But I think what the difference here is somebody that somebody that was transphobic wouldn't, when pointed out where they're incorrect, immediately say, okay, I messed up.
Yeah.
Come out with an apology video. And then, he's working on correcting the mistakes that he made in the video, but that's somebody that is genuinely, sorry for any sort of harm they may have caused and looking to get the right information out there. Because if he wasn't, he would have just stuck to his guns and said, well, that's the way that I feel. You know what? Take it or leave it. And that's sort of where the divide happens, is because we're not taking up for or backing or supporting Rationality Rules video. We're supporting him as a person because he's being unduly labeled something that he isn't because of a mistake that he made.
Right.
Okay. I would say, like, definitionally, at the time that he made that video, he is that thing. And if we're working on different definitions, if we're working on different understandings of what transphobia means, then that's fine. Like, that's a thing that we can talk about. But sure. the ardent kind of and I understand it as well, right? Like being labeled as something that you see as being really, really bad that you think that you're not, like that. That's going to cause a very virulent reaction in you, right? Sure. But I think like we can have this conversation about why a thing is transphobic or not. I mean, I would very much recommend like watching Philosophy Tube's video on transphobia. Right, he explains some of the very benign seeming forms that it takes. Right. And if you don't understand what this term means, right, and if you've misunderstood what is meant when somebody has said that you have transphobic views, I can understand how you'd be upset, right? But
sure.
I mean, this is me telling you, and Essence of Thought has like said it in their videos as well, right? Like that this is the working definition. This is the definition that we are using. And I suppose I really think like now's the time when you can say, right, well, if you're not using that definition, what do you mean when you call me transphobic? And like, How can we move forward from here? Because like, I don't like seeing splits in the secular community at all, you know. And really, the only reason to say that Woodford has transphobic views is to try and get him to change those views and to move forward as a community that's like inclusive for everybody, right? That maybe feels like, you know, excluded.
Yeah, which he was doing, right?
Yeah, that's what we're working towards, and that's why like I think it's important to keep that goal in mind and not to let this crack an entire community because of... Now, if he was sticking to his guns and to his video and not willing to budge, it'd be a completely different story right now. But all we're saying is that, you know, the guy made a couple of mistakes. Let him fix those. He's apologized. There's no need to sort of this crusade to crucify him like seems to be going on. You know, and I completely agree with
we still don't know how much of his views have changed, right? He hasn't like fully addressed that yet. But like if he has, he's still very much stuck on this I am not transphobic like thing, right?
Well, and
like
not. I say, I it's just
like at this point it's like for him to like reach out and say, what do you actually mean when you call me transphobic, right? Or at least to accept the definitions that have been given by the other side rather than constantly insisting that he's being called hateful or malicious, but, right? Vivian, which is not what anybody has said.
You can't expect him to work with your schema, right? You're working from a feminist standpoint theory type of gender study position, which is where they use a lot of these terminologies, right? And that's fine within that microcosm. There's nothing wrong with that. But you can't just go, I want everybody else to use these terminologies. I would like certain people to use the terminologies I use. I've been fighting that for years, but I don't go around saying, you know, if you don't use them, you're a horrible, horrible person and you're anti-philosophy or something, right? your philosophy for.
No, and that's not my. That's not my point. That's not my point at all. It's just that. Right. Words are there to communicate concepts, right? And if we think that somebody is trying to communicate a concept other than that which they mean by the word which they say, then we're not having a productive conversation, right? We have to be able to communicate our ideas, right? We have to be able to understand each other. And
I agree.
And yeah, it all comes down to semantics in the end.
I agree. Hopefully we will make a conclusion here. But I have faith that we will. Faith. I have faith that we will.
Thanks, Vivian.
I really hope so. Anyway,
thank you, Vivian. It was a pleasure to talk to you.
Bye.
Have a good night. Okay, so that's gonna be it for the calls. The balance on here, because we have to, as people are on here and it's accruing minutes and stuff like that. Our balance, because this show wasn't planned. Was lower than it should have been. I usually put it up there on Wednesdays, but it takes 24 hours for it to post. So even though I uploaded some more on there, it won't be there till tomorrow anyway. So there are 38 cents left on there now. And so that's not enough to get a call started. So unfortunately, I'm going to have to, Daniel and Jen, I hate to do this, but we have to drop because we're not going to be able to get to those. Set out. But yeah, this is a situation that is dominating everything, and it's a conversation that needs to happen, but it's a conversation that's not happening the appropriate way, and that's because people are more concerned about name calling and labeling and turning what in every other sense is an ally, somebody that's for the most part holds your views, wants the same outcomes that you do. We're villainizing them. I think that's there's no other way to say this. I think that's fucked up. There's no proper term to say that. It's just, it's fucked up. And
it doesn't do anybody any good. Yeah, either side to get something out of that. Nothing.
And it doesn't.
There's no win.
And it doesn't do anything but harm yourselves. Like if you're coming from the trans community, putting these labels on people that it doesn't apply to erodes the impact of that word, so that when somebody is actually transphobic, you won't be able to identify them because so many other people have been labeled transphobic. Mm-hmm. And the parties involved in this situation have said where they were wrong on both sides. Both sides did the right thing here. I don't know what we're still so angry about. Like, why are we so mad? Both sides did wrong. Both sides admitted they did wrong. And both sides pointed out how they were going to do better and that they wanted to do better. And isn't that what we as critical thinkers and as skeptics, and don't we expect that of people? Like, look at the scientific method or how science works. It's something, you lay out something and you work towards a situation to disprove that. And if you can't, go ahead.
But Kai, when you have two groups that are so diametrically opposite as they were, right? I mean, I don't think you could find a situation where you could have anything more opposed when you had Rationality Rules in the ACA. But, you know, like Shannon even asked me, what would you like to see happen? And I enumerated what I'd like to see happen. And that pretty much happened. I can't complain, right? I mean, we're mostly moderate when it comes to that regard, right? We're looking for that. Let's have a conversation. Let's see what we can find that we agree with, what we disagree with, and what we can change. And that's exactly what they did. And yet you still have people on polar ends. And this is in both sides of those communities. I guarantee it right now, there are people in the ACA very high up in that organization that are not happy with the ACA right now and have said so. A few of them have actually said on air that they didn't agree with the decision to kind of kind of a retraction. And then you have also people that, that thought rationality rules shouldn't have conceded as much as he did. I'm right there in the middle. I'm like, look, you can find fault with anybody, anytime, for any reason. What good does that do? I think that they came together. They both took steps in the right direction. You can argue it wasn't enough. You can argue it wasn't, it was too much. But the point is, it was still two people from person and organization from very different perspectives coming together to try to at least reconcile things. Yeah. What else do you fucking want, people?
What more can we ask?
What else do you want? I mean, you know,
these are both I would consider as a member of the LGBTQ community. They're both allies to this community. They both have done things to
right.
Sort of to stomp on the discrimination and the this is not how this should go the way that it's going. And disagree does not mean divide. I keep saying that. Disagree does not mean divide. Disagree does not mean divide. And we're letting a situation, we're spending time having to defend ourselves against these labels that don't apply to us by people who shouldn't be speaking for entire communities anyway. We're having to defend that. It takes away from the time that we could spend doing other things.
Infighting, that's wasted energy.
Why can't we get back to the theists? I bet they're having a heyday with this. This atheist civil war.
Oh, yes, they are. Oh, of course they are. They're like, yeah. Oh, look at the atheist community rip themselves apart. I got my issues with the atheist community as well, but I know they do a lot of good stuff, and I don't want to see them torn apart. I just want to see them get better at stuff. But I'd rather have a conversation with them than say, oh, well, you know, they're anti this or anti that or this. I mean, that doesn't do anybody any good.
Yeah. So
and free speech does not include making fun of my sweater, just FYI. Not included. It's in the Constitution somewhere.
Burning all the bridges. It's like, build more bridges. I don't know what you mean by burning all the bridges, David McGinnis. Nobody's burnt a bridge. And if people think that there's a bridge being burnt here, they need to stay on the other side of that pond anyway. That's what I would say. I don't know who's burning bridges. Okay. Let me pull up Super
Chats. There have been people that burned some bridges long ago when, you know, Santa, they decided to go their own route. Bridges. But no, not at all. No, it's other people that have decided to go a route that, for whatever reason, they thought was the morally high road to do, which to me was the very moral low road, but whatever.
Let them burn them.
Sweater phobia, thank you. Sweater phobia. We're both wearing sweaters, and we've got people
are tripping. Okay, so let's see here. We've got Brian Shannon says, at Kyle and at Steve, sleepy white noise machines. Awesome. Kwiasa, I wonder if the women I've dated feel like myself right now when I use to talk about history. Speed of sound. This RR thing reminds me of Eve Psych Rage, a paper will hit a political hot button. Then instead of addressing it rationally, it becomes venomous. Okay. So again, I think I see a lot of parallels with this word transphobic and the word atheist in regards to the arbitrary definitions. Probably same with the word misogyny, too much politicalization. Mark Beiser, you can't run around a lot too. Mark Beiser, you can't be a nonconformist if you don't drink coffee. I don't drink coffee.
I drink coffee.
Crazy. Coffee. And then Arne Rorvik says, sometimes Norwegian insomnia is a blessing. Love you guys. We love you too. And thank you for commenting on, I think literally you have commented on every video. I recognized your Jesus face. No, Arne Rorvik. Arne Rorvik. On every video.
Of course. You know, yeah, he's been around forever and a day. He has the buddy Jesus.
Yeah. He's always got something nice to everything. Say.
I don't know how he does it, how he finds time.
Yeah.
Always good comments, nice though. Yep.
Okay. If you have any questions in the chat, you can tag me real quick and I'll answer them for you. Other than that, we're going to start to wind down and close out. Steve, do you have any Anything?
No, this was good. This was a good call-in thing. I really enjoyed it. You know, I have the call-in thing where I do some philosophy stuff on like my channel, and then on this we get to talk about all kinds of stuff. And I like when people just call in, and you never know what they're going to ask, and you just answer questions. I find it to be one of the best forms of free discourse out there. So mm-hmm. Thank you guys for calling in. Yep. I appreciate it a lot.
I'm impressed by the caliber of people that call in too.
Great questions.
Have all been fantastic, even the ones that disagree with us.
My favorite. And,
Dogma, 20 years ago today. At nonsense. What does that mean? Divine disbelief. Oh, that's the traitor anyway. Mm. What does Dogma 20 years ago today mean? Divine disbelief. DRP says
the movie.
Oh, Dogma was 20 years ago. Really? Holy cow. Has it been that long? That's one of my favorite all-time movies, actually. I thought that movie was brilliant.
DPR, the DRP, sorry. I'm used to saying DPR Jones. DRP podcast, which David Worley says, do you think Steve is an atheist? Yes. I have said this on many occasions. I do think Steve is an atheist. I think anyone that doesn't have a belief.
You've been not shy about that.
I think that anyone that doesn't believe by default is an atheist. So yes, Steve is an atheist.
We were both on DPR's channel, and it was really good, by the way. Very good podcast.
DRP. Yeah.
DPR, RPG, RL.
Check it out if you
whatever letters you want to be.
I noticed that DRP sliced up because I went on there. I didn't get to have a fun. I didn't get to have a fun.
He had 8 videos or something he sliced it up to, didn't he?
Podcast, like everyone else on his podcast does. Everyone else, if you watch them, they're all having, you know, the really fun questions and this sort of thing. It was like I was on an episode of Dateline or something where I was getting, there were screen caps coming in and recorded conversations and explain this. I was interrogated for 3 hours. So I'm sort of.
Yeah, that was like a job interview.
I'm offended. David McGinnis says to review Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones, I is still the greatest TV show on to ever. I think that they dropped the ball because they smashed too much into too few episodes in, and I'm not going to give any spoilers away, so don't worry. But they smashed too much in too few episodes. This should have been a 10-episode season. I think some of the things that they did would have been better explained instead of just happening like minutes later and you don't get to see the progression of the characters. I think that it just felt rushed and it felt forced.
Is it the end of the season or the end of the show?
Both.
Okay, well, there was a show finale, okay.
Yeah. They needed to let us track that arc that these characters took, and it felt forced and rushed, and I wasn't satisfied with the way that the way that it ended was it was a fine ending. Don't get me wrong. The way that it ended was fine. I mean, it was actually great. It was a good ending for me, and I know that may not be very popular, but I think it was a great ending. If they would have just took the time to get me there.
That's a fair. I mean, I haven't watched it, and maybe I will watch one of these days. I told you I would, but you know, I mean, there's nothing worse than the Dexter series finale. That was one of the greatest blunders in the history of TV.
Yeah, it just Breaking Bad has that crown due to this season. Breaking Bad is a really good contender for that. Although I wasn't happy with the way that they ended that one.
Did you see the alternate ending?
No.
It's on YouTube. It's 30 seconds long. Go watch it. Go find the alternate ending for Breaking Bad. 30 seconds long, and it changes everything.
Yeah. Kyle, this gnome makes me feel satisfied. I'm glad. The dragon was eaten in the last episode. Spoiler alert. No, Divine Disbelief Susan said she loves you. You're still her favorite garden gnome, and I'm still your favorite trader. No. She can't love me for what she did to me at Faithless Forum. Ever. Eric Price says, I appreciate the rational conversation on this topic. I think that I think that's the way to sort of counter this hysteria and over outrage on things. You have to sort of take a step back and think about both sides, because both sides have points. This is not a all or, you know, all one side. You don't have to choose a side. I think both sides have points, and we need to be able to take from both sides. And it's not an all or nothing. Sokka Kemp, do you think people making theistic arguments as an explanation understand how any argument that appeals to the supernatural lacks any exploratory virtue? No, not at all.
I don't think they understand that. No,
not at all. But they're commanded. Or they're told about you coming into it. You know, it's foretold that they're going to be mocked, and people aren't going to understand it, and they just need to have faith. And as long as they have the faith in things that are seen and unseen, then they'll be all right. And so that's their sort of the rock on that, I think.
Yeah. It's programmed. Yeah. I mean, I've always said that, look at, I'm fine with people positing a deity for an overall arching explanation of everything, right? A theory of everything, I guess you can say. But the reality is it's not explanatory. The closest you can get is that you're going to end up with some kind of metaphysical necessity, which is quite possible. If you want to call that metaphysical necessity God, that's perfectly fine to do so. There's something logical about that, but it's not explanatory. But neither is the other options as well. I mean, you're eventually going to reach some kind of bedrock. You're going to reach some kind of infinite regress, which is not explanatory, a brute fact, which is not explanatory, or metaphysical necessity, which is not explanatory. So either thing, any way you go, it's not explanatory. But yes, I agree with Sucker Count that theist don't really understand that just positing God for theistic arguments doesn't do anything. It doesn't explain anything.
Pizza Person Peppers, I have not tried post chicken and waffle cereal, but I would not be adverse to it. I'm going to be on Truth. I'm actually going to be on an ACA program called Truth Wanted with Objectively Dan.
Wait, you're homophobic. How are you getting on there?
Huh?
You're homophobic. How can you get on there?
I guess they're going to make an exception this time. I'm homophobic. Yeah. Just let that sink in. I had literally someone tell me I was homophobic. Literally.
I can't get over that. I mean, I shouldn't be laughing because it's still pretty shitty, but it's got to laugh at it.
Well, to sort of call back from last night, it's at least I'm not getting fisted. I'll just say that. And people who watched last night's episode will know exactly what I'm talking about there. Did I tell you that, Steve?
I don't remember. Refresh.
I'll tell you off. It's too long.
Okay,
short
tell, me, tell me later. Tell okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, who tomorrow we're going to be having an abortion roundtable. We'll be talking about the different sort of legislative events that are going on with abortion. We'll have all episodes. We'll have all sides represented. We have somebody that is completely pro-choice, somebody that's completely pro-life, somebody that is that believes that you should have the choice, but that themselves are pro-life. And we're going to have not a controversial talk at all tomorrow, because that's not what we do here. We don't talk about controversial things. We shun them. All right, so for non sequitur, I am a homophobic gay man. That is a magic-hating wizard. And Dave is an anti-producing producer. And we'll see you tomorrow.